I'd like to speak tonight about seeing into that which sees. Part of what can happen for us here is that we can begin to discover more and more deeply how the meditation actually works. There's not just this fear that I spoke to, or desiring tendency in the mind. There's also confusion at times. Confusion about many different things. I'm not just talking about the difficulty we might experience at times when we're trying to think about something and we have difficulty, you know, formulating clarity. There's subtle confusion in the mind. I'm talking more about the nature of this state, the deeper nature of this state, and the way it clouds or obscures what realization is, and if you would look at it conceptually, what the path or paths are to realization. Once the initial confusion about life, about yourself, is clarified, and what I mean here is the confusion about what you're doing with your life. And if you begin to realize for sure that your life has the potential within it of awakening, awakening beyond suffering. This is not a clarity that all human beings have. There are multiple human beings in all directions who are living with confusion, and they are accepting certain qualities of experience as the way it has to be, struggle and conflict, and this is the way it is for these human beings, and they live this way and they die this way. In some cases they're even born into this conditioning of confusion and conflict. Before they even come out of the womb, the impressions that are coming from the mother into the child or into the soon-be child are ones of confusion. The fact that we're sitting here, the fact that we have the opportunity to do something like this is actually quite rare. You could say that the privilege to actually sit and to contemplate life rather than just be absorbed and struggling to survive it, to make ends meet. And it's easy to forget this. It's easy actually to become sort of bypassed over, around it, and not really see what is given. And learning that freedom of not taking more than is given, not trying to extract more out of the moment than the moment offers. You can think about it for a minute. It's a little bit ridiculous, although sometimes we do this. Like, did you like the pudding? Okay, so I did. But in part because I like brown things and chocolate. I don't know whether it was chocolate or not, it doesn't matter, but it had a quality of chocolate because it was brown for me. Maybe it was carob, I don't care. Kind of chocolate in a way, it's on the line. And you're tasting something, it's like it's the pudding, right, or whatever it is. It's ridiculous to try to extract more out of what's happening than what's happening. And yet the mind sometimes does this. How does it do it? It's tasting this and then it goes, this is good. It could be a little bit more of this. It jumps out just a little bit, jumps ahead a little bit. Or a lot. I mean, it even goes so far as, you know, if we did this longer, you would see these things even more clearly, because the longer people meditate, the more they realize how insane they are. But you also realize that it doesn't have to be like that. Okay, you really get to see your monkey mind. You get to see the grasping, the clinging, the resistance, this fear, this doubt, you know, this confusion stuff. It gets super clear. And that is very fascinating to realize that's possible. But it doesn't happen for everybody. Because not everybody has the opportunity, nor do they take advantage of the opportunity to actually sit and observe their life rather than participate and go with the momentum that can get created around accomplishment, around acquisition, around, you know, working it out with other people in relationship, around creating a career, around raising a family. It can consume a lot of one's focus and attention. And this is not in any way contradictory to the practice. Every spiritual tradition points at the possibility of being completely engaged in one's daily, you could say, householder life, and to be fully engaged in the inquiry and the meditation simultaneously. Some traditions will say it's more difficult than if you create an environment of a sort of simplicity and renunciation. These things seem to make a difference. And these points of view can be there, and they can be compelling. But your life is your life, and what you're doing with your life is what you're doing right now. And so, we can get into the sense that there's work to do here sometimes. That it feels like work to actually sit and do nothing. To just sit here and stay with what's happening. It's like work sometimes. And one feels as if there's a sense of effort involved. And the effort is centered around really one thing. It's the encounter with resistance. What makes it difficult at times for any of us when we're sitting here is this built-up habit of resisting what is. It seems more complicated than that because it gets confused. It seems to get layered up as something more than just resistance. But if you actually think about it logically, if there was no resistance, if resistance just poof, evaporated, where would the problem be? Where would the suffering be? And furthermore, where would be the idea in the mind of a better, different place or different, better place? And what happens to the path at that point? The ideas of the path. The teachings over and over and over in different ways. I'm not just talking about the Buddhist teachings. I'm talking about the teachings of truth in all their forms. The teachings over and over point to things like your own treasure house, your own true nature is right here, already, inherent, intrinsic, always already present. And yet, if there's resistance, if there's fear, if there's desire, if there's confusion, and that's filling the space of awareness, because awareness is a space, then it doesn't seem that way. It doesn't seem that the true nature is always already here. And it doesn't work to simply think about it, to say, yeah, I believe that. What is it, what I mean by it? To say it doesn't work. It doesn't provide realization to think about the truth. So what does... So part of this is then discovering how the meditation itself works, how the meditation itself works to uncover the truth. Not tonight, but tomorrow night. I'm going to go into some more depth on this particular sutra from the Mahayana tradition, Mahayana Buddhist tradition. This sutra, I'll mention it briefly now, is called the Vimalakirti Sutra. Vimalakirti was this particular bodhisattva, and we're going to get into Vimalakirti and some of his buddies tomorrow night. In the sutra, it says, reality is perceived through, keyword, through your own body. This very body. I pointed at this already today. Reality is perceived through your own body, this very body. Because of the resistance, at times the meditation can feel effortful. And if someone tells you that true effort, right effort, being part of the Buddha Eightfold Path, right effort, is no effort, and then your experience seems to communicate, that's not how it feels, how does that work? And there's an answer. The answer is the perception of effort, the experience of efforting, the experience of trying, as subtle as that may be, is that which needs to be exposed, revealed, you could say opened up, so that no effort appears. It's as if to say, to see through the efforting tendency, to see through the habit of trying. Like if someone says to us, and we've heard this many times, many of us, maybe I didn't do the yoga today with you, but Steve might have said something around relaxation. I've said it actually today a little bit. We have a bunch of downloaded information in our minds, brains, bodies about what relaxation teachings are about, what they mean. And there's a lot of subtle ways that people talk and teach and suggest about relaxation. Now watch. Can you try to relax? And the answer might be, yeah, I can try to relax. But how does that work? If you actually look at what relaxing is, what do you find? You find something, I think, quite different than trying. You find something different than effort. You find something different than clinging. You actually find, at times, maybe, when relaxation is taking place, what you would call relaxation. Okay, there, that's relaxation. You know what's happening right there? Change. More specifically, what's happening right there is the mind is releasing or released from clinging. And it might go by very quickly. It might only be an instant or two, clinging, gone. And one might not even notice a particular difference, because clinging can be very, very subtle. Very subtle. As can be resistance. Very subtle. If you sit with the idea, either consciously or unconsciously, that the point of this is to release clinging, because clinging causes suffering, you have believed, assumed, or even felt. Try to stop clinging. Try to stop. Furthermore, try to, once you've stopped, never start again. And find out what happens. The actuality of the meditative insight is that clinging, as a, you might say, process or a state or an energy, whatever you call it, comes and goes. And as it's discovered that it appears spontaneously and it releases or ceases, here's the third noble truth now, ceases spontaneously, then not only is it not so threatening, not only is it not so much now something to overcome or get rid of, because it's showing itself as it truly is, which is, same thing we've been pointing at, everything comes and goes. So clinging, attaching, some people think the point is to become unattached. Who's going to do that? Where's that one who's going to become unattached? It's made up. It's a projection. It's a fantasy. What we're looking into here is how things actually are. Not how we have thought they are, not how we've assumed they are, not how we've heard they are necessarily, not how we've thought they are, but how they actually are. That's the point of the meditation. That's the liberating nature point of the meditation. Okay. Now, satisfaction is never going to happen from or within a state that feels it's lacking. And I could say that as a human being, if a human being is feeling that they are lacking, if they are experiencing a sense of lack, dissatisfaction, satisfaction is never going to happen. It's completely futile when, you could say, invested in from a place of dissatisfaction. Wholeness, which for now we could call satisfaction or fulfillment, wholeness is not a state of feeling. It's not a common sense of shared perceptual ease. So what I mean by that is human beings who get together and agree upon certain things sometimes will rest into some degree of satisfaction or comfort around their shared perceptions or beliefs. This is how it is. This is the truth. We see the same thing. We agree. We've talked about it. It seems true, it feels true, it is true. And there's a certain sense of common, you might call it, I might call it, perceptual ease that happens there. And this is not wholeness. The nature of all states, and beginning to see the nature of all states, and I mean all feelings now too, and I mean all perceptions now too. Seeing the true nature of these states, feelings, perceptions begins to expose or open up what wholeness, fulfillment, satisfaction actually is. So how can we get to this a little bit more directly, experientially? In order to realize what you are as wholeness itself, to realize wholeness as not a state or feeling or perception, but as the truth of what life is, which you are, not only a part of. You see, as soon as you say that, a part of, then there's something else that the part is a part of. To begin to recognize wholeness, fulfillment, begin to see that the body-mind is not experiencing itself right now. The body-mind is not experiencing itself. Thoughts, images, feelings, sensations, perceptions, these forms that are happening here are experienced. What is experiencing them? What is experiencing what's occurring? If you say, I am, it's not entirely wrong, but it's not very investigating. It's actually one's picking up something probably from the memory bank there and saying, I'm experiencing these things. Because someone told me that I was experiencing things. Where'd that come from? Pointer now is all of what is occurring is being experienced. By what? What is experiencing this? Beginning to see what is experiencing what is happening. It's right here. There cannot be any conscious experience without that which is experiencing the experience. And the reason why I'm pointing at it is because until it's differentiated, not separated, because it's never separate, that which is experiencing what is occurring is never separate from what is occurring. But until it's differentiated, it is in the swirl. And when it's in the swirl, the more it's in the swirl, the more life seems like a swirl of thoughts, images, feelings, sensations, perceptions, over and over and over and over. I should add, and behavior based on, motivated, coming from these feelings, thoughts, images, perceptions. You could put memory in there if you'd like. And this is common, you could say, familiar human existence. Begin to see that which is experiencing whatever is happening is actually the same no matter what experience is occurring. Okay, let me go slow here. That's a subtle point. That which is experiencing the myriad experiences, the changing experiences, we can all agree there's been a lot of changes just since 10:30 this morning, yeah? A lot of stuff moved through. Changing weather. Ups and downs. Expanding, contracting. Getting more concentrated, getting less concentrated. Maybe feeling some happiness, then feeling some sadness. Looking forward to dinner, being disappointed. Wondering why did they put the salad in there like that? All they have to do is put the salad out on the table in the dining hall and we could all get at it at once. You actually have to come here prior to tonight to have thought that. This noggin went, I need to talk to them. You could put the salad out on the table. And then we could have at it all at once. Or maybe they like standing in line. Then it started getting sort of into that. Maybe they like standing in line. Maybe we should have standing in line for the food meditation. In-depth instruction. Those of you that stand at the end of the line, at the very end of the line, you get extra points. what is experiencing that is the same thing that's experiencing everything else. And let's be careful about calling it you, if someone else is calling it that, or I. We can do that, but that's not going to do us much good right now. We're not talking about, at this point, something that has a word, actually. Although we're going to play with a few, because what can I say? Could say that, but it's tricky. If you got an inner self, then you got an outer self, and you got an in between the inner and the outer, you know, and it starts to get, do you have multiple selves or only one? Or is there no self? And if it's no self, where's that? How do you realize that there's no self? That's the core of the Buddha's teachings. I don't know, I quit. I'm just going to go lie down. It's like killing me, it's too confusing. Yeah. Words, tricky. We're not here to just collect more concepts. It's so easy to read books and collect concepts and walk around with the concepts. You can actually give yourself some real interesting perceptual ease by just taking a concept and even repeating it in your mind, like do a mantra meditation. Try that. Mantraize something that you think is true and real and find out what happens. The words point somewhere and you start to have an experience, start to resonate with it. It actually does something. We're not here to have more words in our brain about things. That's really easy to do that. All you have to do is feed the brain and it takes the language and it just takes it in. Throw any word at it. God, inner self, outer self, higher self, the self, big S. Realize self. Even words like being, tricky. Beginning to see what is experiencing, what is happening. Beginning to see that what is experiencing, what is happening is the same. No matter what is happening. Also, noticing in the scene of that which is experiencing what is happening. Notice if there's an easing of friction, conflict, confusion, fear, desire. Notice. Notice. See for yourself. If the experience seems initially contracted, conflicted, confused, what does this scene of that which is experiencing that? What's the effect? You'll see pretty clearly, quickly perhaps, there is a tranquilizing effect. There is an easing of the tension conflict. You may not know it, but you're experiencing the Third Noble Truth. When the Buddha named the Third Noble Truth, he used the word, apparently, cessation. I don't know what the Buddhist Pali word is for cessation. It's a synonym for dissipation. We call it release. Cessation. Cessation of conflict, suffering. Cessation. Dissipation. When that which is experiencing experience is recognized, cessation occurs to varying degrees. See it. The deep idea, very deep idea in some human minds, that things need to be worked out here, processed, understood, resolved, even transformed, is always, almost always at least, connected to the idea or belief that there's someone who is getting this worked out. And if you begin to see that which is experiencing experience, you begin to see that that which is experiencing experience is not just the same no matter what's happening, but that which is experiencing experience isn't working on anything. It's not trying to go anywhere, it's not trying to work things out, it has nothing to solve, and when it's really recognized, it has no conflict. We put a word at it. We could just simply call it abiding presence. And it's right here in this room. Let me say that again. The idea, sometimes very deep idea in the mind, that things need to be worked out. They need to be processed. They need to be understood. They need to be transformed. They need to be resolved. It's almost always connected to the idea that there's someone who is going to work these things out. And I ask you now, is there a someone that can be found in just the simple noticing of that which is experiencing these things right now? In that which is experiencing these things right now. Isn't this, in a way, without me kind of pushing it with suggestion, that's not the point, isn't this noticing of that which is experiencing things quite a bit like just the open space of this room? Does the open space of this room have any problem with anything that anybody's going through? Does the open space of this room have to work on anything that we bring here for it? It's not to dehumanize this. It's to clarify this. What happens to this idea that everything's needing to be processed, worked on, sorted, integrated? How about that one? That's a popular one. Yeah, integrate it. Synthesize it. Balance it. Adjust it. Stretch it. You could go around stretching this thing all day long, the rest of your life, stretching this thing. You know what? You'd end up with a stretched body. You wouldn't necessarily have anything else. I'm not against yoga. It's great. Relaxation's great. If you're interested in realization, if you're interested in what awakening actually is, that's something quite different. This is not about generating, maintaining, and cultivating particular states and returning to them or keeping them going or making them better, refining them. And I don't care how nice it gets inside here. It's going to come and it's going to go. Are you interested in what comes and goes, or are you interested in what doesn't come and go? And there's a difference. And there's not a right or wrong answer. You're free to go either way. Sometimes we call that which is experiencing experience, we call that sometimes awareness, or we call that the I that's aware. But the opportunity right now is to see what is being referred to. What is being referred to by the word or thought I? When I say word, word is a singular thought, one word thought. It's called one word thought. I is a one word thought. If we look closely, can we find any substance to this eye right now? Any substance? Any substantiality to this eye thought right now? Have a look. When you begin to see that there's no substance to this, there's no locatability. What you actually begin to see is what awareness itself is. There appears to be an I, but all it ever is a quickly moving, singular word thought that comes and goes. And something, it's not really a something, there is that which sees that thought. And that's awareness. So when you look for the thought, you look for the I, What you end up finding, whether you know it or not, is awareness. You begin to find the awareness that sees what's happening. You begin to find that which is the same no matter what's taking place. Here's another way at it. If I asked you to stand up and take a step towards yourself, how would you do it? I mean, we won't do this, but let's say I did. Okay, stand up, just imagine this, stand up and take a step towards yourself. Where would you go? There's a saying in the Tibetan teachings, which I like a lot. It says, what you really are, is too close to see. The eye, notice this right now, it's very interesting. The eye cannot see itself. There is no place where freedom is not. Therefore, it cannot be seen. But it can be realized. It cannot be seen with the eye. And I said before today, the brain mind is almost always invested in, involved in, habituatedly going around in locating, defining, and over defining itself in the world. And not only that, but it goes and it defines itself over here and the world over there. It defines itself here and then it says you're over there. And it does this over and over and over. It's not right or wrong, it just does it. This saying, what you really are, is too close to see, is referring to our typical attempts to see or understand things. However, when we begin to turn and look afresh, and look with beginner's mind, and look like we've never looked before, and we may never look again, looking as if it's our last moment to ever look at anything, just little suggestions that can rev up the earnestness. And if we're looking for something other than what is happening, that which we are is hiding inside the very looking for something else. What's pointed at here now is a different kind of seeing, not the eyes seeing and attempting to see and not being able to see themselves. What's sometimes called direct perception, I use a different word, I like to change it a little and call it clear seeing, openness. And then it has ripple effect. This clear seeing openness has a ripple effect. It's called ease, peace, even love. Not conditioned love, but love as the manifestation of true unconditional acceptance. Beginning to see that which is seen. What appears, what keeps appearing and disappearing, is appearing on or in something. Now I'm going to change the angle. Because the word seeing is the same as realization. If you like, it's the same as insight. Insight's the operational form that realization takes. What's appearing is appearing on or in something. And it is the same as what I spoke of before, which is that which is experiencing or that which sees, is that which experience appears in or on. Example. It's like a screen that shows up and allows the movie to play upon it. There's never a movie without a screen, is there? I mean, you can make the screen a wall instead of a, you know, official screen. But the movie appears and shows up on something, in something. And we often, readily, comfortably, easily forget about the screen when we're into the movie. I actually attempt to avoid movies in theaters as often as I can these days because I can't stand the previews that fill enough space that I feel like I'm done before the movie even plays. One, two, I know how to count. Three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten. 10 previews. You're a captive audience. We've got you. And now we're going to make sure you know what we're doing. I'm done. So I figured out, okay, maybe what I need to do is have enough friends, not just one, but enough friends that I go to the movies with, where I say, you go in and tolerate this, and text me when the previews are over. And then I'll walk in. Save me a seat if it's a busy one. Save me a seat, and I'll just stay away. I'll go out and I'll be in the breeze and the light and the sun and just meditating. And then I'll come in just in the right point to catch the main show. No matter whether it's a preview or it's a movie that you selected and want to stay in and are staying from front to back, there's a screen that it shows on. What appears on the screen may be pleasant, unpleasant, desirable, undesirable, confused, frightening, terrifying, wonderful, blissful, etc., etc., etc. You can put any word you want there that names or attempts to describe experience, and that's what appears on the screen. And what appears on the screen always comes and goes, guaranteed. It's always appearing and disappearing, just like any movie that shows on a screen. Note, the beginning of the movie, before the movie even begins, I should say, before the previews start, and that's difficult. They seem to me to have them running constantly so that you can come 45 minutes early and there's something there, you know, at least popcorn popping, you know, something for the mind. But every now and then you get lucky, it hasn't happened to me for a while, I don't go to many movies, where the screen has nothing on it. Blank screen. Wouldn't it be interesting if you could stare at the blank screen and realize your true nature? It doesn't go like that. Watch the people who are looking at the book. They won't even look at it very long. What they're going to do is pick up a screen, a little one.
Oh.
Yeah. Another screen with stuff on it. Who wants to look at gray blankness? What if that was your true nature, hiding in the blank, empty, totally ordinary gray screen? What if that was where true fulfillment lay? What we're about here isn't some lofty, detached, indifferent state, position of apartness. Rather, it's the very nature and function of seeing and seeing clearly that finally sets the human being free amidst the movie. Try to escape the movie. Find some powerful drugs, not suggested, just a thought. try to change the movie, get rid of the movie. What human beings are doing when they cling to non-existence, which manifests sometimes as suicide, is they're trying to stop the movie. Beginning to recognize the screen, beginning to see that which everything is appearing upon, everything is appearing within. Allows the human to shift into a place of freedom amidst. It's what the Sufis call the realization of being in the world but not of it. Without seeing into that which sees, we are over and over again vulnerable to varying degrees to getting caught in the movie. To getting caught in the movie. And sometimes we like it. We like getting caught up in things. And sometimes we don't like it at all. The mind, over and over until it's seen clearly in its tendencies, gets pulled into or resisting things. And looking for fulfillment in experiences. Has any experience ever fulfilled you completely? We may clearly, intellectually at first, know in our intellect that everything changes. We may agree to that, have no conflict with it. We may see, even in our direct intuitive experience, our insight, that everything comes and goes. We see this directly, maybe quite a bit. And it may have opened up quite a bit of ease in some areas of our life. You might look back and go, well, I used to struggle this way, I used to struggle that way, and if I look at my narrative, I don't struggle like that, I don't react as much, I'm less angry, whatever. And yet, no matter how much we intellectually appreciate change and have experienced it, when push comes to shove, when life gets nitty-gritty, when you know what hits the fan hard enough, what does the mind do? What does the mind do? It tends to do the same thing it's always done. Habitually. It reacts. This is fascinating because there's a reaction in this system that perpetuates life. If a situation emerges where it seems like this could be mortally harmed, amazing to watch how the biochemistry works, the instinct to survive. If you see that in the nitty-gritty of certain frictional moments, the mind goes to its habit over and over, and you see that habit as the same nature as everything else, it comes, it goes. Then what happens is the tendency to try to escape conditioning, we'll call that the movie, can fall away. Because the point here isn't to get rid of conditioning. The point here isn't to get rid of anything. And then there's another side. The point is to realize there's nothing to get. Accept the realization that there's nothing to get. And that's not something. That's not in the movie. That's not possessible. It's not something that anybody gets. So, some of us know about this concept of bottoming out. It's often used in the world of addiction. We talk about the bottomed out phenomena, that a human isn't ready to actually allow transformation. Their ego mind, their controlling tendency, their addiction is too pervasive, it's too in charge. They haven't actually, strangely enough, suffered enough to hit the bottom. And so what they're doing is they're playing in this realm of trying to have what they want, control, not have too much suffering, but, you know, addiction over and over and over and over and over. And by the way, the primary addiction in the human mind isn't to substances. The primary addiction in the human mind is to the idea that you exist as a separate being. And so it's the same. When the conditioning around the view that you're a separate being hits the bottom, then it's not a point anymore to try to transform that or change that, because it's realized that nobody has that conditioning. That conditioning unfolds itself. Its nature is ephemeral, transitory. Its nature is open and free, as it is all the time. And the only thing that suggests other than that is the idea that there's somebody who owns it, who has it, who's working on it, trying to transform it, shift it, open it, adjust it, get back, get beyond it. I'm not talking here now about changing conditioning, overcoming conditioning. I'm talking about seeing the nature of conditioning. And as you see the nature of conditioning, spontaneously, there's a potential to see through that conditioning. Seeing that something's happening is one thing. Seeing what is happening to that thing that is being seen is something else. Most human beings, if you ask them what's happening, they'll be able to tell you to some extent what's going on, and the words will seem cogent, accurate, resonant. To see what's happening to what is happening means to see through it, to see that it's empty, not solid, not permanent, not possessible, not you. Not yours, never was, never will be. And this scene now that I'm pointing at, this scene through, it is prior to, which means beyond. Same thing. Prior to is the same as beyond. Conceptual understanding. It's beyond our thought process. It's literally beyond conditioning. And it's sitting right here in this room. To varying degrees. Seen as that which everything is appearing in. Which everything is appearing on. These are just different angles to point at it. That which sees experience. I'm talking about a fundamental reset button. I'm talking about the nature of freedom amidst the movie. Okay, meditation is not really about finding out who you are. Meditation is about finding out who you aren't, but thought took yourself to be. And as these overlays, in Hinduism it's called Maya, these veils or overlays, and they are overlays of feeling, thought, memory, perception, sensation, identifying with experience. That's a big one, identifying yourself as the experience. As these overlays rise to the surface, which they will if you sit still or if you practice you know, earnestly, if you learn to pause and stop and observe, these overlays will show up. Your unconscious will come all the way up. And everything that's inside that needs to be revealed will come to the surface. It might take us some time, but it'll happen. There's some teachers that just tell you to stop. Just stop doing all of that. Just stop. They give a little more than that, but just stop. Sit still. Stuff like that. And they don't mean it like you're a little kid. Sit still. Because usually little kids, when they're told to sit still, feel the need to not sit still. Unless they're Buddhas, and they see that they're Buddhas, then they go, I'm already sitting still. What's your problem? Why are you telling me to sit still? You sit still. So they've got to come to the surface. It's like lifting sheets off a bed. Okay? And these sheets that are coming off the bed, every single one of them has the same nature. It's impermanence, it's transitory, it doesn't last. Part of freedom is to see the nature of the sheets. As you keep the sheets keep coming to the surface and peeling, you begin to see what's here. Eventually that isn't actually peeling away. I'm already pointing at it. That which sees. The same thing that sees now was seen when you were, quote-unquote, 5 years old. The first conscious moment, you know, you may not remember it now, but if you kind of thought back, what was the first conscious moment that you ever had? That which saw that experience at that time is the same thing that's seeing these experiences right now. It is timeless. The inherent intrinsic nature of what we are is under the sheets. And so we could call the meditation simply preparing the soil or the bed so the truth can reveal itself. And this truth that reveals itself is sometimes called the Buddha. Buddha means awakened. And Buddha means awakening. Awakening, that sounds like a process, yes? Awakened, that's the end of the process. So the Buddha is awakening and awakened, both. The Buddha body, yeah, sometimes also called the Dharma, Dharma truth, Kaya, Kaya means body. The Dharma Kaya, Buddha body. Or if you'd like, the truth body, reality body. It is not actually physical. But the Dharma Kaya, Buddha body, truth body, would be much more difficult to recognize without a physical body. We can go around and think about this and talk with others about this and read about what is the purpose, if there is such a purpose, of having a body. What's going on here? What's really going on with these bodies? And one suggestion, it's all it is that the purpose, if you will, or function of the body, physical, is to realize the Dharmakaya or Buddha body. Reality body, truth body. Again, back to Vimalakirti Sutra when he said, reality is perceived through your very own body. Through, again, key word. In the Lotus Sutra, very beautiful sutra, the Buddha explains that he has always and will always exist to lead beings to their salvation. This is not a physical form now. The physical form comes and goes. In the case of the Buddha, the physical form was about 80 years duration. I love that. The Buddha explains that he has always and will always exist to lead beings to their salvation. We're using words there to point at is that which is timeless, unbounded, deathless, unborn. Your very true nature. A very interesting Tibetan Buddhist teacher named Reginald Ray. He put it like this. He said, the body of reality itself, without specific delimited, that means limited, form, is the Dharmakaya, wherein the Buddha is identified with the spiritually charged nature of everything that is. That's an amazingly subtle distinction. He's distinguishing the Dharmakaya, the Buddha body, from the spiritually charged Buddha nature of everything that is. The Dharmakaya is all form. It's in the movie and the screen. But it's not realized as the Dharmakaya until the movie and the screen is seen as openness, or here's another tricky word, emptiness itself, which is another word for freedom and liberation, emptiness. This is misunderstood in the conceptual mind because we think of emptiness as the opposite of fullness. We think of emptiness as nothing, and nothing is no good or something. So how do we get to this experientially again? There's five great elements, and they're sitting here. Earth, water, fire, space. Air, sorry. Earth, water, fire, air, space. Please listen to this closely. It's very well written, not myself writing. Space is simultaneously the first and last of the great elements. It is the origin and precondition of the other four, and it is also their culmination. The Sanskrit word for space is the same as for sky, akasha, which means shining and clear. What is that we call the sky? It is that which marks the boundary of our vision, the limit the sight can reach. If we could see more clearly, the sky would extend infinitely into outer space. The sky is an imaginary boundary set by the limitations of our senses and also by the limitations of our mind perception. Since we find it almost impossible to imagine a totally limitless universe, space is the dimension in which everything exists. Space is the screen. Space is that which sees. It is all-encompassing, all-pervading, and boundless. It is synonymous with emptiness. That emptiness is synonymous with fullness. Emptiness, the realization of emptiness, is the only place where wholeness lives. And it's the only place, and it's not a place. Where fulfillment occurs. So the Dharmakaya then is likened to sky and space. This pervasive and persistent metaphor for freedom functions as a linkage and conduit between the conceptual and conceivable and the ineffable and the inconceivable. Look into the space where conception can't go. Right now, look into the place where awareness seems to be. It is, but cannot actually be found. That is the edge between conceptual and inconceivable. Another image, very similar but different. The looking glass, mirror image. The looking glass metaphor represents the Dharmakaya or truth, the truth body, the reality body. In that, the looking glass mirror has two aspects. It has the aspect of purity. A mirror is clear of pollution. And it has the aspect of wisdom. Purity and wisdom. What is the wisdom? The mirror reflects all phenomena without distinction. That's what we are. We're a looking glass mirror in our Dharmakaya nature. So, what happens as part of the so-called movie? When you look at other human beings, what do you see? Do you see bodies? Do you see intellects? Do you see emotions? Do you see personalities? Do you see an individual? Whatever you see out there, so to speak, in others, is what you're identified with in here. Or maybe you see something else. Maybe when you look at other beings, you feel or see interconnectedness. You feel or see compassion, regardless of what their condition or state seems to be. And maybe you've actually taken time to look into other beings' eyes, not as the window of the soul, necessarily. And what you begin to see in the eyes of every other human being is the exact same thing that's looking out of your eyes. You begin to see sameness. You begin to see simultaneity. You don't see a body so much, or an intellect, or an emotion, or a personality, or an individual. It's awareness meeting awareness. You begin to see that there's only billions of beings who are all one. So then I'd say to you, if reality is perceived through the body, as was suggested by Vimalakirti, what is it that is perceiving reality? It is the same that allows everything to appear. It is the same that allows everything to function. It is reality perceiving reality. Reality, in this case now, is undivided, whole, complete, and essentially fulfilled already as itself. In this case, reality is the same as the truth. The only aspect of reality that perceives itself as apart or separate is the human being. When they are under the influence of perceptual distortion, and wonderfully so as well, is that it is also within the human being to perceive and see through these perceptual distortions. And this is why the deepest teachings of the Buddha address these distortions clearly and directly. Reality is not two. This means reality is non-dual. Reality is whole, complete, one. This is not just a meditative insight. This is science. neuroscience is all over the fact that they cannot find an individual being in the brain activity. There's electrically charged magnetic phenomena occurring in the brain. There is no I in there, except the thought, word thought that appears and disappears. And didn't have that going on at the time of the Buddha. They just had the insights meditatively. Now the scientific mind, believe it or not, the conceptual scientific mind with the instrumentation is penetrating into this and going, holy smokes, it's true. Capital T. Whoa. And it's not by mistake that the Institute of National Health, the National Institute of Health is spending more money than they've ever spent in the history of the organization studying meditation. Right now. What a fantastic activity. So, let's do end of the talk here coming. Let's deal with these perceptual distortions. Okay? They're centered around the marks of existence, impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and selflessness. And there's a gross and subtle level to each. The gross level of impermanence is that everything has a beginning and an end. This is not easy. I mean, not difficult for human beings to recognize. Yes, everything has a beginning, everything has an end. Sure. And they even see that. They start and they finish. The subtle level of impermanence is to begin to see that in between the beginning and the end, all there ever is transition. So what we would call the beginning, so to speak, demarcated, and the ending, demarcated, is filled in between by very subtle, rapidly appearing beginnings and endings. That's the nature of impermanence. When we don't see this, then the mind has a tendency, varies with human being, from human being to human being, sometimes very intense and sometimes not so intense, grasping, resisting, struggling, fighting with this truth. Trying to make things last that don't. Trying to keep things going, repeat things. As soon as these insights at the gross and then subtle level start to appear, the mind lets go. It spontaneously lets go. It's not somebody makes the mind let go. It just releases. Now, unsatisfactoriness. What's the gross level of unsatisfactoriness? If everything is becoming something other than what it was a moment before, how can there be anything in any experience that brings lasting satisfaction or fulfillment? It's impossible. But the subtle level of unsatisfactoriness is that if there's a belief in yourself as a separate entity, which can't be found, but if there's a belief and investment in that, then this belief and this investment in I am a separate entity is consistently bereft with this sense of separation from life, apart from. It's very subtle and often accepted by human beings as, sure, yeah, there's you and me, and we're not together, necessarily different opinions. You know, we can be apart, it's fine. I'm here, you're there. So commonly accepted, it becomes part of the perceptual ease mechanism of the mind, especially when it gets with other minds. But what's so critical and missed is that every human being, regardless of their conditions, their wealth, their health, their acquisition, their state of mind, is experiencing every single day existential loss. even human beings who say, I have everything you could want, those human beings are experiencing existential loss every single day, just like you and me. And instead of this being something to escape, once it's faced and seen, what opens up then, at least the gross level of selflessness opens up. The gross level of selflessness is that if all that arises and falls does so because of causes and conditions, if it's all a process, and ultimately without a center or owner to whom it's happening, if you can't find a self in the center of it, what does that say about this teaching of no self, non-self, or selflessness? That's the gross level, which is still pretty subtle. Now here's the subtle level. If everything is becoming something other than what it was a moment before, then nothing actually exists. Everything is nothing in this form that I'm speaking. Everything is empty, impermanent, transitory, insubstantial. And instead of this being a foreboding, dangerous, fall off a cliff into hell or something, it's the exact opposite. The cause of suffering is the belief in an I or a me that doesn't actually exist, that can navigate, maintain, accomplish, improve, exist longer, etc., etc., etc. It's going diametrically opposite to the truth. Just consider this, because we can get it with our intellects, and that's part of this. If everything is becoming something other than what it was a moment before, then nothing exists. Because existence indicates duration in time, doesn't it? What remains as these perceptual distortions are seen through? And what's amazing is human beings, without even having meditative training, as they actually approach dying, if their mind is not too confused, afraid, or desirous, or caught in the movie, what actually starts to happen is they start to see exactly what I'm talking about. And I know this for a fact because I've observed human beings talking from this place that I'm talking from as they're dying. What remains when these perceptual distortions, like sheets on the bed, start to peel off, is compassion, openness, generosity, kindness, benevolence towards all things, appropriate balanced concern for others, joy in giving, tremendous ever sort of renewing energy, even as the body ages, the energy of the Dharmakaya may become even stronger as the body starts to kind of fall apart and things don't work so well. If the identification is there with the body, then you think it's happening to you. These qualities that I mentioned, which are just a few, they don't belong to anyone, and therefore they resonate in and through this body. Because this body isn't even yours. We call it ours. Nothing is yours. There is no ownership. And it's that release into the realization that there is no ownership that frees things up. So strangely, without a title on it, everything that's happening is yours. But not in a possessed sense. Not in an ownership. It's my title. I got my title on it. It's simply open and clear. That's the nature of realization. And so then the body is simply a conduit for this. And these qualities I'm mentioning, which are beautiful, wonderful qualities, they do come and go, of course, they are the byproducts of illumination. They're not illumination. Illumination itself is like, and this is only, you can only talk about it with analogies and things, you can't really talk about it, there's no words for it. The illumination itself is like the sunlight. Saying the sunlight is near reveals it can never be grasped. When we say the sunlight is far away, it's right here before our eyes. Try to follow it, can't be grasped. Run from it, and it follows. This is an analogy for the Dharmakaya. Can't possess, cannot get away from. That's interesting. You could run to the ends of your life. You cannot run away from what you are. You may not see it. You may not realize it. You may stay deluded and confused and in denial of it, but you cannot escape it. I'm just going to read this now. Two passages and we'll complete. The second is a meditation instruction, this incredible meditation instruction from Nyingma, one of the great Tibetan meditation teachers. This is from Ramana Maharshi, one of the simplest and greatest and silent, often silent saints ever to rise in India. He said it like this: there is no greater mystery than this. Being reality ourselves, we seek to gain reality. To think that there is something hiding reality and that must be destroyed before the truth is gained, this is clearly ridiculous. A day will dawn when you will laugh at your past efforts. What you realize on that day that you laugh is also here and now. A woman asked Milarepa for meditation instructions. There's a lot of great stories about Milarepa. The one I like is that when some people were asking him about the depth of his realization and how he came to that realization, without words, he just lifted up his buttocks and he showed them by apparently lifting the cloth away, his leathery behind from having sat on his butt so much. And then he put it back down. So these are the instructions that Milarepa gave to the young woman who was asking about meditation. And these are very, very good words. Milarepa responded, he said, look at the sky. Without increasing nor diminishing it. Look at the mountains without moving away or holding on to them. look at the sea without getting lost on the surface of it, nor in the depths. Look at the mind without altering it in any way. If you could just sit for a minute or two.